Manatasi stood in the temple of Astarte. It was after midnight, but there were many torches burning and the halls were crowded with warriors. So many that Manatasi had ordered the interior walls torn out of the building to give them access to the mouth of the tunnel. The dark, evil-looking stone mouth, which had already swallowed up so many of his men, was where the two fighting devils of Opet still held out, defying all his efforts to dislodge them. Even now they were dragging dead and badly wounded from the entrance. One of them had his right arm lopped off from above the elbow. He made no sound as he clutched at the stump, but his eyes were huge and white in the torchlight. Manatasi knew what weapon had inflicted that wound, and his anger and his hatred smoldered hotly, warring with the superstitious dread that gripped him. He had learnt enough about the gods of Opet while he was a slave to know their vast powers, their strength, and cruelties. He feared them, and he knew that he stood now in the stronghold of these terrible gods, in their holy place. He remembered now hearing of this underground place beyond the Temple of Astarte. He knew that a death curse guarded it. Clearly this was the reason why they'd taken sanctuary here, in this dark hole. His anger cooled, chilled by religious awe. He knew the white gods were watching him. He wanted to end it now, destroy this place and go. However, two doomed but stubborn men defied him.
"Fire," he said, "fire! Smoke them from their den like wild dogs."
They built the fire in the entrance of the tunnel and fed it with green branches, and dense, acrid smoke filled the temple and the tunnel. They ringed the tunnel entrance, coughing and choking in the smoke, and they held their weapons ready, knowing that no man could live in there. This must bring them out, surely. But an hour passed with no movement through the smoke. The fire burnt down into a smoldering pile of logs, and the smoke cleared gradually. Manatasi ordered it quenched with water from the pool, and once again they stared into the dark passage, from which wisps and streamers of smoke still drifted. The floor of the passage was still carpeted with the dead, but there was no sign of life. Manatasi subdued his religious awe and abruptly snatched a torch from the hand of one of his warriors. Holding it high above his head, he stepped over the hot and sizzling logs and into the passage. He picked his way amongst the dead, and the floor was puddled and sticky with blood that clung to his bare feet. The torch threw yellow light into each of the stone recesses with their burdened shelves. Manatasi knew what the earthenware pots contained. He had assisted Hui often enough with the scrolls. He looked for sign of him now, but there was none, only the black bodies and the empty recesses. He reached the end of the passage, and the torch lit the engraved image. Manatasi recognized it as the symbol of the sun god, and his courage melted at this tangible evidence of divine influence. On the floor below, something caught his eye, sparkling in the torchlight. He suppressed a gasp. It was the vulture axe, laid like an offering before the god image, and the place was empty. They had gone to their gods. They had cheated him of his revenge, and led him into deadly peril, into a direct confrontation with supernatural forces. Manatasi backed away until the god image merged into the darkness, and he turned and ran from the place into the hall of the temple of Astarte. And there he looked back at the mouth of the tunnel.
"Bring me masons from amongst the freed slaves. Seal off that entrance, it is evil. Seal it."
They ran to obey, and Manatasi's courage, his anger, and his hatred returned to him.
"I will destroy this place. I will put a curse upon this place, upon these cliffs, a curse that will last forever."
And his voice rose into a near scream.
"Burn it! Burn it all! Destroy it!" It is an evil to be cleared from the earth and from the minds of men forever. So the masons sealed off the entrance to the tomb of the kings. They worked with all the skill that the men of Opet had taught them, and when they were finished, the entrance had vanished. Then Manatasi destroyed the city. He slew every single living thing and threw them on the fires which raged through the lower city for many days. And then he looked at the walls and the towers, and he pointed with his iron claw. They tore it down block by massive block, the walls and the sun towers and the beautiful temple of Astarte. They went down to the very foundations. They lifted the flag pavings. They tore out the stone wharves of the harbor. Working like a million ants, they razed the city until no trace of it remained. They carried each block of masonry up to the cavern and dropped it into the bottomless green pool. They took the entire city and gave it to the goddess, and the pool was so deep, or the goddess so eternally greedy, that it was swallowed without trace, and the level of the green, clear waters rose not a finger's width. When Manatasi marched from Opet eastwards to complete the destruction of the empire, he left nothing behind him but piles of loose ash, which the wind was already scattering in pale runs of dust. Manatasi spread his regiments like a net across the four kingdoms with the command to destroy all trace of the cities and the mines and the gardens built by the men of Opet. But his hatred had burnt low now, like a forest fire when the trees are gone. The hatred had left him hollow, blackened, and dying. His huge, battered frame a husk, even the smoky yellow eyes dull and uncaring. He came to Zimbau, the great walled city of the Middle Kingdom, and the men of Opet were dead. The city, like his own body, was untenanted, empty, and deserted. Manatasi wrapped himself in a fur kaross and lay down beside the watchfire, and in the morning his body was stiff and cold. They buried him outside the walls, and then they quarreled and fought, for Manatasi had named no successor. Each war captain named himself, and the army of Manatasi split into 100 tribes. In time, Manatasi and the city of Opet faded from the memory of men. When Hai, the bushman, was an old man, and knew he was dying, he came back to Opet. The lake had dwindled. Its shores were 20 miles from the red cliffs, and the waters were brackish and shallow and sun-warmed. Hai walked over the spot on which the temple of Baal had stood, without recognizing it, until he saw the cleft in the red rock leading to the cavern of Astarte. He camped beside the pool, building a small fire, and sitting over it mumbling to himself in the manner of old men. When his memories paraded before him, they were magnified and magnificent, and he sought to capture and fix them. He picked up his belt, on which were strung the little horn pots of pigment, each plugged with a piece of wood, and he went to the wall at the rear of the cavern. He made the outline of the figure in charcoal upon the smoothest place of the wall. He worked slowly and carefully with great love. Then he mixed his pigment and began to paint the proud, godlike figure, with its white face, red-gold beard, and majestic, vaunting manhood. And as he worked, it seemed as though ghost voices whispered deep in the rock, down in the vault of the kings.
"Hui, I'm cold. Favor me, old friend. Give me the hand of friendship that the oracle foresaw." "I cannot, Lannan. I cannot do it. I am cold and in pain, Hui. If you love me, you will do it. I love you." Fly for me, bird of the sun.
As the old man worked, the wind whispered and sighed along the cliffs, and the sigh was that which a man might make when he's lost his love and his land, has denied his gods and has given mercy to his friend. He might sigh like that as he takes the sword, still dulled with his friend's blood, and sets the hilt firmly in the niche of the stone floor, and places the point up under his ribs, and falls forward upon it. And to end this story, here are some quotations from South African daily papers. First of all, from the Rand Daily Mail, dated the 27th of May. Death of multimillionaire financier Lauren Stuyvesant dies of mystery disease. Botswana, Saturday. The well-known millionaire financier and sportsman Mr. Lauren Stuyvesant of Kleinasher Sandown, Johannesburg, died here yesterday after a brief illness. Mr. Stuyvesant was visiting the site of the recently discovered ancient Carthaginian city in Botswana. The leader of the expedition, Dr. Benjamin Kazin, has also contracted the disease, which is believed to be infectious. Dr. Kazin has been flown to Johannesburg, where a hospital spokesman stated that his condition was critical. From the Financial Gazette of the 28th of May, Stop Press, Anglo-Stuyvesant crashes 97 points, panic on the exchange. Hollard Street, Monday, following reports of the death of Mr. Lauren Stuyvesant, chairman of Anglo-Stuyvesant, quoted prices of the Stuyvesant group of companies fell sharply on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange today. And from the Star of the 3rd of June, famous archaeologist regains consciousness. Johannesburg, Friday. After 10 days in coma, Dr. Benjamin Kazin today regained consciousness, according to a hospital spokesman. Dr. Kazin is the director of the Institute of Anthropology and African Prehistory and the discoverer of the ancient Carthaginian city of Opet. He was suffering from a rare fungus infection contracted while working on the site of his recent find. Today, Dr. Kazin was visited by his assistant, Dr. Sally Benator, who said afterwards that Dr. Kazin was very much better, but still terribly upset by the death of Mr. Stuyvesant. And again from the Star, dated 3 months later, the 6th of September, well-known archaeologist Mary, Cape Town, Friday. The discoverer of the city of Opet, Dr. Benjamin Kazin, was married to his long-time assistant, Dr. Sally Benator, in a brief civil ceremony here today. The bride said that she planned a working honeymoon at the site of the ancient city of Opet. And finally, from the Times, the 20th of April, archaeologist honoured, London, Saturday. At the Royal Geographical Society, an extraordinary general meeting of the Society was held today, during which Dr. Benjamin Kazin was awarded the Society's much-prized Founders and Patrons Medal. After the meeting, there was a short ceremony at which a portrait of Dr. Kazin by the well-known artist Pietro Anigoni was hung in the Society. Dr. Kazin was accompanied by his wife, Dr. Sally Kazin, former Benator, who is also a well-known figure in archaeological circles. The couple will spend 2 weeks holidaying in Britain and on the continent before returning to Africa.